people that you can always trust and that you can always go to.
We recently found this video, a defrocked Roman Catholic priest, Oliver O'Grady, videotaped a deposition in which police asked him to demonstrate his routine that he would sort of speak to lure kids in. Let's take a look.
Hi, Sally. How you doing? Come here. I want to give you a hug. You're a sweetheart. You know that. Very special to me. I like you a lot. She might respond, I like you too. And that would allow me to give a better hug to you.
I mean, let's ignore the fact this guy was a priest. It's just so creepy to hear him actually kind of spell it out like that, and even his face.
They're good at it. I mean, this is what people, the misconception that it's the guy under the bridge with the trench coat that exposes himself. I mean, 4,000 priests have been accused or convicted of being pedophiles. I've been tracking them for years, 20 years now. They really know the ways to manipulate kids. They're non-threatening.
Shut the hell up, fool. All of you clowns who support the capitalist system are pedophiles in one form or another against kids. So don't start talking about, this is the old typical approach. Be scared of your neighbors. Be scared of your colleagues. Be scared of people at work. Everyone's trying to kidnap your kid. Everyone's trying to destroy your kid. The mercury in the food, unleashed by these corporations, is killing kids. These corporations that are laying off families, whole families at a time, are devastating kids. Kids can't go outside because they're getting asthma. It's not because of some pedophile. It's because these asthmophiles polluting corporations. Diabetes, too, has hit the market strong in America because of the fast food chains and other junks that are simulated into the kids' systems. At school, they got ID chips that they want to hang around kids' necks to know every step they take. So don't talk about anything about some neighbor being a potential threat when this whole system is the threat. You know what time it is, slave time check. Illinois, 101.1 Santa Cruz, LUBER.com, the world, RadioFraud.net, the universe, and click into your Slave Revolt blog by going into the Google web, Slave Revolt Radio. Find out what time it is. Tonight, we're going to shoot our way into a couple of issues dealing with an empire in ruin. As it deals with madcaps on the right in their ideology and comments, and then also a humanitarian aid. Is it humanitarian aid or humanitarian imperialism? You got all that and hell a lot more. 104.1 Slave Revolt. Start off with this Ruins of Empire segment as it deals with the issue of what is truly collapsing within this particular wretched society. You know that day by day, one can notice the degeneration of American society and the contradictions and blatant hypocrisy, which are astounding and at times out and out bizarre. Neil Horsley, he's this right-wing, anti-abortion, hocus-pocus crusading Christian nut, was recently on the Alan Combs radio program. Alan Combs is the co-host of Hannity and Combs, you know, the little right-wing show on Fox. Now, Combs had read an article concerning this Neil Horsley in the Esquire magazine, where this fine Christian man admitted that in the 1970s, he was involved in, amongst all other things, to bestiality. Now, let's see how this plays out and what they have to say to each other. Check this out.
An Esquire magazine interview acknowledged taking part in homosexual sex and bestiality in the 70s.
Hey, Alan, if you want to accuse me of having sex when I was a fool, I did everything that crossed my mind that looked like it might feel good.
You had sex with animals?
As an active hedonist, absolutely. I was a fool.
You had sex with animals?
Oh, when you grow up on a farm in Georgia, and your first girlfriend is a mule.
I'm not so sure that is so...
Well, that's because you didn't grow up on a farm in Georgia, did you?
Are you suggesting that everybody who grows up on a farm in Georgia has a mule as a girlfriend?
Well, not the girls.
It has historically been the case. You people are so far removed from the...
Look, I'll admit, Neil, I'm a city boy. I don't know a lot about growing up on a farm.
Well, hello, welcome to domestic life on the farm.
But I think for you to say, there are a lot of people listening to you, Neil, there are a lot of people listening to me right now who live on farms, are raising kids on farms, mm-hmm. who grew up on farms, and I don't think they're dating Elsie right now. You know what I'm saying?
The fact of the matter is, don't know that in fact you experiment with anything that moves when you're growing up sexually, it's you're naive and you know better than that. You know yourself. If it's warm and if it's damp and it vibrates, you might in fact have sex with it.
Now this is the right. How in the hell are these fools still on top? This is what the capitalist is producing. This is their cadre. Fools talking and bragging and justifying bestiality in the good old days. Not in the 1600s. In his youth. I mean, this is insanity. Now, Combs was caught off guard because, see, these are his basic allies. But he had to ask the guy the question in part because the issue just propped up on itself. And just like the usual spin doctors in the corporate media system usually play these things out, he was expecting the guy to backtrack from the statement or say it was taken out of context or whatever. But no, this Christian nut was bragging about it. Proud. Talking all of this rhetoric about your first girlfriend is a mule when you're on the farm. These are the same dogs and hypocrites, though, that turn around and want to shoot abortion clinic doctors for performing abortion. This is what this guy is noted for. This is why I bring it up, this Neil Horsley guy. He's one of these right-wing staunch advocates against abortion, extremist types. But this is his background. This is what he's really all about. Tyranny. They'll turn around and talk family values to you. In the same way that Bolton's all caught up in his little contradiction because he used to go to some little, you know, free-for-all club back in the day, you know, playing a staunch conservative role, but Larry Flint appears to have found out that he took his wife to this, you know, come one, come all sex parlor, you know, where group sex and orgies and all of that were the norm. I don't care what these fools do, but when they turn around and try to play this role where they're pushing through legislation to ban certain types of dancing for cheerleaders in Texas. Before that, they were pushing through legislation for the virgin test. If you were to be a cheerleader, you would have to pass the virgin test. This shows how sick these clowns are and how hypocritical they are in their totality.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, man. What can one say about... I'm sorry, Trey. This got to top it off for me. The hypocrisy, though, is what worries me. Because, personally, as you said, I don't care about the orgy, about them having fun with the goats and all of that. The thing is, now that they think they done found Jesus, workers,
now they screw over us.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, next to show that... The wild fantasies of these Fox aficionados knows no bounds. Here we have none other than Bill O'Reilly. Now, here O'Reilly outlines his tough guy combat record to his audience. This is a thing that, you know, he's done this before, where he's gone over this mystical John Wayne combat type of rhetoric. But let's check out what he has to say on the air to his listeners about his combat experience and how he deals with the enemy. Check this out.
I tell you what, I've been in combat. I've seen it. I've been close to it. And if my unit is in danger and I got a captured guy and the guy knows where the enemy is and I'm looking him in the eye, the guy better tell me. That's all I'm going to tell you. He better tell me. If it's life or death, he's going first.
If it's life or death, he's going first. If I got a captured guy, then he better tell me the information I need to know. The problem is that, one, O'Reilly's never been in combat. What the hell is he talking about? I mean, this is just make-believe fantasy stuff. But it also is him blurring the line of what a reporter and a military guy is supposed to be. You know, so he's going on about this fantasy type stuff about what he would do, and all he's ever done is have a pen in his hand. But he clearly gives the impression, if my unit is in danger, those were his words, and I got a captured guy, he better tell me what I need to know. It's either him or me. He's going to go first. This is someone who's in a commanding position. This is not some reporter, but this is how O'Reilly is playing this off. But in the midst of all of this, what ended up happening one time to O'Reilly was a caller named Roger, who actually called in to the O'Reilly show to talk about prisoner abuse issues, you know, during this war. But he hears O'Reilly blather on about his combat war stories. And he, like many of us have known, that O'Reilly was never in no damn combat. So this is what ensues.
Roger, Portland, Oregon. What say you, Roger?
Yeah, hey, Bill. Bill, first things first. You just said that you've been in combat, but you've never been in the military, have you?
No, I have not.
Then why do you say you've been in combat?
Why do I say that, Roger? Because I was in the middle of a couple of firefights in South and Central America.
But you're a media guy.
Yeah, a media guy with a pen, not a gun. And people were shooting at me, Roger.
Is people might think that you actually were in the military.
We don't want to mislead anybody, but I made it quite clear in many, many circumstances. Yeah. Hey, listen, Roger, you know what? You can take your little fair and balanced snip remark and shove it, okay? You're not getting on this air. And you, Mr. Macho Man, would have never come close to anything like down where I've been, okay? So take a walk and, well, enough said.
So O'Reilly gets his ass shown out by Roger, who had known about the facts, calls him on it. O'Reilly has to admit that the only weapon he had in his hand was a ballpoint pen. So then he gets pissed off when Roger says, "We want to be fair and balanced, don't we?" So then he goes off. O'Reilly goes off on him and then calls him Macho Man and tells him to shove it. See, this showed you the hypocrisy of this whole thing. This is this shameless hypocrisy and distortion. And when they get caught ass out, instead of just being humble and saying, "Look, I got caught ass out," he's going to get all irate and stuff and act like he wants to fight somebody. Mr. Combat Man himself.
Well, hold on now, brothers and sisters. Here we are. You know, it's hard. What can you say about something so blatant like that? To show you the low quality of the human material of this right wing. I mean, my word. These people think they can get away with anything. They're flying high. But you know what? I think their flight might be a little shorter than they originally thought.
Now, to show you how the corporate media helps in a way it's structured perpetuate an echo chamber of confusion. This is why it's not just about the truth or just about the facts. You can have all the facts, quote unquote, on the ground or whatever, but if you don't have the power, then you're ass out. The same could be said over this whole issue and transported over this issue in Iraq, where it's clear that the United States government is the imperial invading government. They're on the side of the Nazi type imperial invasions throughout history, but they have the power. So they ignored and manipulated the whole process, you know, the UN and all these little charade type things, and went ahead and proceeded with their war. As evidence has helped show, Boy George had set up this war before any of the other issues were on the ground to be worked out. In other words, this was a pre-cooked war proposition that the empire had already ready made, set up before any of this so-called proof or evidence of weapons of mass destruction or any of that other stuff. It was all to fit their already designed program of imperial invasion. Now, the reason why I mention this is that Roger did this thing a little while ago. Now, just last week, O'Reilly, back on his own show, is discussing the Fallujah incident where a soldier, a U.S. G.I. Joe soldier, shot an unarmed man. The man moved a little bit, so the soldier justified shooting him. It was obvious that it was just a cowardly hit that the soldier did. Now, they were discussing the acquittal, and with O'Reilly, meaning two colonels were on his show. And after going over the issues of stress in combat and stuff like that, O'Reilly decides to ask the two colonels their combat experience.
Have you been in combat, Colonel?
Me?
Yes.
No, sir, I have not.
Okay. How about you, Colonel?
Yes.
Okay, so you know what we're talking about, because I was in combat, and when you are there, your adrenaline's flying through your ears, and you know, you got the gun.
So here, O'Reilly just keeps on saying the same lies after he got his ass busted out a little while ago, because the machinery behind him is basically based in perpetuating deceit, perpetuating falsehoods, perpetuating diversion. So O'Reilly is in a vehicle behind a chair driving a machinery, his part of the machinery, that's based in deception and corruption. So the fact that Roger helped expose him on his own show, at the end of the day, did nothing to
deter
O'Reilly, right, from doing what he's doing.
Lying.
Because the machinery that O'Reilly is based in corruption and deceit.
Absolutely. You know, how do you justify some? But that, one would expect, after, was this all on the same broadcast? He gets caught and then comes right back and says the same shit?
Nah, like I said,
it's a different broadcast.
Roger busted him out on an earlier date.
And then
just last week,
wow,
O'Reilly, who had two colonels on discussing some Fallujah incident where a USGI Joe shamelessly and cowardly shot an unarmed civilian.
Murdered.
O'Reilly then brings up his combat card again.
I can't. It's hard. No, but Trace, I'm sorry, but it's hard to believe that anybody would be that hardcore with their systematic lies.
Not to me. I think if people take an honest look at what's been going on with people like DeLahey, with people like Bolton,
yeah,
with Boy George,
yeah,
and how Boy George has been caught manipulating and lying and so on and so forth. You have Rumsfeld developing this Office of Special Plans, an obvious secretive, covert distortion operation designed to mislead and lie to the American people so that they can help concoct a false story of the United States being under the gun and threat of the Iraqi government. It was based in lies and falsehoods. It gets exposed. Rumsfeld and company just keep on stomping. They keep on goose stepping. And so it's the machinery that these guys are behind that helps allow their perpetuation of war, deceit, and destruction to keep on going. They're weak, pitiful, shallow individuals, beyond mediocre intellectuals, but they are operating within a machinery that has power, and that, in essence, what has to be destroyed.
But you know what? There's another thing that allows them to keep doing it, and that's the fact that they don't get challenged enough on it. In a big way.
Well, that's part of the aspect of their power. Their power comes from a number of things.
The vacuum of power of the working class.
Obviously. I mean, that, you know, the fact that they don't have a vibrant working class contesting them and challenging them and has their own individual voice, the fact that you don't have a strong, vibrant working class thrusting away the Democrats and not being caught in the illusion that the Democrats are part of the antidote to the Republican helps their whole power structure as a whole. So that's beyond obvious.
Shameless.
But hold on a sec as we check out some more stuff.
Thank you. Attention, seekers everywhere. I was right. Everything I knew was wrong.
Next, we're about to go into a Beyond the Shadow segment. And I deal with, a question that many radicals, revolutionaries, et cetera, should be asking. And it concerns the Marla Rizika situation. Is this, and what she stood for, was it a form of progressive imperialism or humanitarian imperialism? You know, a while back, Marla Rizika, a humanitarian activist, was killed in Iraq while doing basically a count of the number of Iraqi people who were injured by the U.S. military killing machine. Now, she does this, or did this, in part to get funding for the victims of the U.S. War in Iraq. So Iraqi victims of U.S. imperial war, she would get counts of the wounded, et cetera, et cetera, take it to Washington, and through Leahy, get a certain amount of money, and then help financially and medically these victims in Iraq. We're going to deal with this because there's been much focus on her bravery, and by all accounts, you know, she was a courageous person, but courage alone is not what those of us who are committed to fundamental structural societal changes within this economic order can only focus on. So we're going to deal with this issue. Tim Reisner, he's an aide to Senator Tom Leahy, was on Democracy Now! Not too long ago, and was asked about his impressions of Marla. So let's check out what Tim Reiser had to say, and then let us take it from there. Check this out.
Marla came to us 3 years ago. She walked into my office. She'd been in Afghanistan, and I really didn't know what to think of Marla. She had been right after the fall of the Taliban, in the middle of bombs exploding all around her, visiting families of Afghans who had lost members of their families as a result of bombs that landed in the wrong place or which were injured or killed from U.S. military mistakes, and she came to us and said, we should do something about this. We hear about these cases, but nobody ever does anything to help these people. And Senator Leahy, who had often expressed concerns about civilian victims of war and had in fact created a program years ago to help civilians in war, was the obvious person for her to come to. And really that was the beginning of a relationship that lasted right to the last day of her death. I talked with Marla either by phone or through email every day for 3 years. And what she did for us was make it possible to hear about what was happening and to learn the facts of individual cases and give Senator Leahy what he needed to be able to then establish, in the case of Afghanistan, a program to help civilians who had either lost loved ones or had their homes destroyed or otherwise suffered losses, now up to about $10 million for programs for Afghan civilian casualties. And then again in Iraq, where Marla went just the day or two after Saddam's statue fell, and for the next 2 years really risked her life every day that she was there, visiting people, showing that Americans did care about what had happened to them, and again giving us the information that we needed to be able to establish a program to assist those people. Really the first time that I'm aware of ever that the United States government has in a formal way provided assistance, whether in the form of medical care or rehabilitation for someone who lost an arm or a leg, or for a woman who lost her husband, a loan to start a business, or repairing a home that was destroyed by a bomb that missed its target. Nothing like this had ever been done before, and we could not possibly have done it had it not been for Marla out there risking her life and getting the information to us.
I'm sorry, brothers and sisters, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but this Marla, now we're talking about what she was doing. Was she helping civilians? Very possibly. That's why they have the Peace Corps, for instance. But what else was she doing? And this is by their own admission. She was gathering information that was turned over to a U.S. Senator Leahy. Who knows where that information went? Directly to the military intelligence? To the CIA? Think about it, brothers and sisters. We're not trying to spit on nobody's grave here. We're talking real. We got to bring about that rebirth again in American politics, the rebirth of the real. Because, I'm sorry, there are two sides in this conflict. And we have a side. Our side is with the workers and the oppressed, the victims of imperialism. Not to prettify someone who knowingly or unknowingly aided imperialism.
See, this is what I mean by you could be courageous, but it's beyond just being courageous. It's what class lines you stand on, consciously or non-consciously, and how those things could be manipulated. When you're given information over to the state, of course, this is going into the military-industrial mix to find out how many resistors are, how many civilians are in this area, what they're prone to, their population density, so on and so forth. You may have other intentions, but the fact of the matter is that you're giving this over to the imperial forces. There's a lack of class consciousness that's absolutely astounding at this point in time in history. If this were World War II and Nazi Germany was stomping into France, and then some German girl went over to Goebbels and Hitler and said, you know, a lot of French are getting hurt, and you know, I would like to get, you know, do a survey of how many are caused, you know, collateral damage, and possibly get some money from the Nazi Empire to help, you know, the innocent people. I'm not talking about the people you're fighting, but not the soldiers you're fighting, but the innocent victims. of course, people would see this as a collaboration with the empire of Nazism. But somehow, because much of the population in America has this kind of rosy illusion about the American way and wants to put on this persona that, see, we want to show that not all Americans are like this. Some of us Americans care. So what ends up happening to her analysis? So Marla said in December of 2003, this is well before she was killed, when she started up some of this type of stuff as the founder of CIVIC, which is Campaign for Innocent Victims in Conflict. She states this, quote, "I decided not to take a position on the war, but to try to do the right humanitarian thing," unquote. Well, wait a minute. If you're not taking a position on the war and being against the imperialist invasion, then a core part of your humanitarian effort is warped, especially if you're aiding or looking for support from the imperialist body. You can't talk about humanitarianism like it's some abstract thing if it's in cahoots, consciously or not, with the imperialist body. Somehow in America, which many activists are so detached from this type of reality, that this is how they can claim, like many of these types do, that they're nonviolent activists, yet work within the machinery of the imperialist structure, which is based in violence. You hear nonviolent activists talk about they're anti-war, they're nonviolent, but then they'll pull the lever for the Democratic Party. If you pull the lever for the Democratic Party, you're not nonviolent. You're electoral jihadists. If you work with the senators of the imperial body of the United States government, you're not really a humanitarian activist.
Or neutral.
Nor are you a nonviolent activist. In the real picture, the real humanitarian picture. But see, this is what we have going on. Now, Leahy actually established the Leahy War Victims Fund. It's a $10 million annual appropriation type of thing for rehabilitation, medical, et cetera, et cetera. He established it in 1989. Now, one could see how this could be acceptable for the imperial body. You basically are stealing these peoples throughout the world resources. You're stealing their land. You're stealing their sovereignty. You're stealing any kind of practice of humanitarian sovereignty that these people may want to develop or have established. And then you throw out some crumbs to them. The U.S. Empire has ripped off already billions of dollars from Iraq. They claim they don't know where it is. They spread depleted uranium all over the Iraqi biosphere. There is no amount of a $10 million account that is going to be anywhere near the type of funding and money that's needed to bring just a minimum amount of medical aid and care to these people. This is not going to be solved through the machinery of the U.S. empire. But see, this is a type of lost in space type of almost, it's on a certain level, defeated political type of approach that many people in the quote-unquote activist community are involved in. But next, Juan Gonzalez ask how often regular citizens come to, U.S. regular citizens come to the U.S. Senate and ask for aid and help. So let's see what Reisner has to say about this, and we'll take it from there.
Unusual is it, how unusual is it for an individual citizen to come to a United States Senator's office and appeal to get involved in a foreign conflict like this and have such an enormous impact?
Never. I don't know if it's ever happened before. Marla was unique. She gave more of herself to more people than anyone I ever expect to meet, and took more risks just to help people than anyone I expect to meet. But she also learned that just protesting or being an activist in a political sense was not enough, that really if she wanted to do something for these people, she had to find ways to work with people who could help her, and that meant the Congress, it meant the U.S. military,
okay.
It meant anyone who in some way, journalists who could publicize what was happening. She was interested in one thing, and that was helping people who had been hurt. And I don't know of anyone in my 20 years in the Congress working for Senator Leahy who has ever done anything like that.
All right, once again, this shows the shamelessness that is set up by, I mean, what Reisner, he's an operative for the imperial structure. So, of course, he's going to think and believe that you have to work within this corrupt, barbaric system. And that means working with Congress, who helped facilitate this imperial war, and the military, which is the armed fist on the ground, stormtroopers for this imperial war. You have to work with them? Now, Reisner also said this in 2003, quote, "I've helped Marla navigate the system. We've been working on this issue for years, but it's a delicate one. Asking for assistance for victims is like asking the Pentagon to admit they made mistakes. Fortunately, their offices in Iraq see the advantages of helping. They see the anger and resentment that happens when bad things happen to the wrong people," unquote. So in other words, nothing you heard Reisner say had anything to do with the basic rights of these people. It had to do with them analyzing the fact that we're helping create more resistance amongst the population who's seething with anger because of our imperialist intervention. So having someone like Marla engaged into the fabric of the imperial structure and giving out, quote unquote, certain types of financial aids to the victims of the U.S. imperial assault, in their mind, helps soothe over the population, or is an attempt to soothe over the population. In other words, it's a trick. It's just an imperialist trick. Now, then Reisner also says this, that he noticed a change in Rizika in the last 2 years since they've been working together. And Marla then commented that, quote, "It's true. Just 2 years ago, I was dragged out of the World Affairs Council when President Bush was speaking. It was his first trip to California, and I bought a ticket to hear him speak. I made my sarong-type skirt into a banner, and when he started his address, I unfurled it and jumped on the table and started shouting, 'Stop the rape cats now!' The cops grabbed me and took me out. These days, I'd rather have a meeting with President Bush than yell at him," unquote. So this helps expose the collaborative type of, she was broken down from her type of activism. Now, I would say that her type of activism is not that she was doing all this yelling at Boy George, getting up and shouting and all of that type of stuff. It's really not productive. It's not engaging the class of people that needs to be engaged into really combating the imperial structure. It's just venting. You know, it's like going to some of these protests and, you know, just walking back and forth up and down the San Francisco streets with a little torch in your hand and stuff like that, and thinking that that in itself is fundamentally going to bring about some kind of change. Often it's just some good exercise. But you could tell that she probably just got worn out from these types of tactics and then started this type of method, and from there she became more of a quote-unquote insider, started to get the attention, so on and so forth. And then this is what started to take place, that she started to cozy up to the military that she often criticized at one time. Now she was saying stuff like, quote, "I'm constantly hitting them up for help, and I've learned that for the most part, they're anxious to help. The Marines have nicknamed me Cluster Bomb Girl because I would hear of places where they had gone off, and I would ask them to help me clear the area," unquote. So here she's starting a collaboration with the military itself. Now, I've seen a picture of her where she's standing kind of like with her hands on her hips, and on both sides of her are two G.I. Joe U.S. military guys with machine guns in their hands. This was kind of like an imperial pose that you would expect, Bill O'Reilly to take, you know, and pretend that he's down. Well, after all, you know, O'Reilly's in combat. He's in combat.
No, you know what? I'm thinking, Tracy, you got me thinking about this question of the insider. How do you go from being a so-called anti-war protester to an insider? Well, we have to think. Insiders, Democratic Party, and the anti-war movement. What's the connection? I'll tell you what the connection is, my brothers and sisters. It's politics. It's program. Many of the people who participated in the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of folks in the United States that were in these various anti-war marches were actually, in their own minds, and you could tell from the politics emitted by the organizers of some of these marches, were trying to pressure the Democratic Party and promoting the Democratic Party as a solution to war. Big mistake. Big mistake. I mean, I hope that illusion is now dead forever. And I'll tell you why. Why am I so... Because when they had the election, they say, "Oh, man, all right, boy, George, what you for?" I want to kill them all. Yeah, okay, all right, you for war. And Mr. Kerry, what are you for? Well, I want to kill them all too, but with more soldiers. I mean, come on. There was no difference. In fact, that's why the damn vote was so close. Because, in fact, there was no qualitative difference between Boy George on the one hand and Kerry, the Democratic Party politician, on the other. If that is true, then you have to stop and see, how is it really amazing for this woman to make a transition from an anti-war mindless activist just doing symbolic crazy stuff that doesn't make any sense anyway, with no politics, to a so-called insider, consciously and directly collaborating with the military and imperialism? Think about this. Politics matters. Program first.
Now, next, an activist in civic, you know, the campaign for innocent victims in conflict, who worked with Marla, describes her courage. So let's see what this civic person has to say. Check this out.
Sure. You know, when I met Marla, like most people, I was really impressed with the accomplishments of a woman so young, having set up the surveys in Afghanistan and Iraq and lobbied in D.C. quite successfully. But, you know, her real passion was in the individual case studies and the one-on-one with the people, going there to hold them in her arms and to help children in hospitals and women who had lost their homes and their entire families while they were out at market if the home was bombed, things like this. And she followed up with them, and people remembered her, and she was a shining light, and she was unstoppable. There was nobody that could stop her from going into danger letting these people know that we as Americans cared. And the sessions were like therapy, because oftentimes people said to her that they know that we suffered loss in the World Trade Center, and they understand what that's like, and they know that it's not us, just like that wasn't them. And she basically represented the rest of us who care over here and want to help, but are either too busy or too scared, or for whatever reason are unable to go to Iraq and hold the people ourselves. And it's that sharing that's very important and will be missed. And, you know, Marlo was not just a saint, but she was a full person. She worked hard constantly, and she also played hard. And when she was home, she rollerbladed to meetings in D.C., and she danced at fundraisers. And that's how she'll be remembered here and abroad. It's just, you know, the life of the party and a humanitarian hero.
All right, once again, you know, certain questions have to be asked, honestly. One, does what Marla was involved in, along with this other woman, does it give a false image of what the U.S. Imperial State stands for to its victims by these procedures? Does it help also corrode the consciousness of developing activists and radicals about, yeah, this is, see, we're really doing something because we're giving cow chips to the peasants of the world that the U.S. empire is obliterating? In a sense, what good is an American population? She talks about, this woman talks about how what Marla did helped show that Americans care. But what good is an American population if they can't link up on a class level to help stop the imperial wars and machinery of this juggernaut? One other thing also has to be mentioned, and that is that, you know, if you listen to what they said, everything is based upon Marla finding out facts on the ground of the U.S. machinery harming Iraqi citizens, civilians, and then getting a certain amount of funds. But what about the civilians that are injured by the resisting forces? Are they given funds? There's nothing in there that gives them funds. Only the people who are quote-unquote hurt by the U.S. imperial machine gets some of these donkey chips. But those who are injured because of the imperialism caused by the U.S., but they're violence, say someone does a suicide bombing and it hurts a family or whatever, there's no money for them. So the issue of civilians being helped because monetarily, because of what the imperialist structure is causing, is not really being dealt with in an honest way. Like I said before, it can't be really dealt with from a monetary way. Sam has to get out, et cetera, you know, all that type of stuff where I'm coming from. But what I'm saying is, even from this little position that they're coming from, they're tied within the outlines of the imperial killing machine. Now, what's also interesting is that Tim Reisner had also said this about Marla Rozicka. The amazing thing is that she came here as an anti-war activist, really. But she quickly saw that wasn't the way to accomplish what she felt strongest about, which was to help innocent people who were wounded, unquote. In other words, being an anti-war activist It's not how you get things done.
Right.
You got to get into our machinery.
Right.
And from that standpoint, if you look at it from a total standpoint, if the empire could, it would and will continue its militaristic imperialist ways throughout the planet. And within that context, you can always have Marlis give out donkey chips to people. After all, Leahy started this in 1989. So this type of quote-unquote humanitarian aid has been going on forever. But let's look at all these different places where Sam has committed atrocities from that time. An honest look says that the devastation has not stopped. The corruption has not stopped. The underdevelopment of the world masses of people, class, working class people, has not stopped because the machinery of the empire is still steamrolling along intact. And that's something that Leahy and Reisner understand quite well, that they can give these donkey chips out and have some of their confederates, like Marla, hand them out for them, because it does not in any way threaten their imperialist machinery. If it did threaten or hinder their imperialist machine in any way, they would stomp it out.
Absolutely. You know what, though? You done inspired me, Trace, with this Marla story, because this is one nobody want to touch this. Because the girl died, and you know, my grandmother told me, she said, it's not nice to talk about dead people unless it's good and all that kind of stuff. So, you know how people think about this. But you made me come up with a little poem, and I'm going to share this with our listeners. I just came up with this, y'all. It was spontaneous. So, I mean, it's open to criticism, but here it is. This is my little letter to Marla. So your life will not be totally meaningless, at least to deal with it on this level. No, Miss Liberal, you can't hide. In imperialist war, you've got to take a side. When your government is wrong, be consistent with this lesson. Side with the Iraqis against U.S. oppression. While many are confused because they haven't learned the lessons of the past, you'll find the answer in the history and the victory of the working class. Young people, study history, y'all. I'm serious about this.
Now, it's interesting that it was also stated by Reisner and the company that he was helping Marla get better at finding grants. And and that she was given a loaner office, an apartment in Washington, D.C., where she's, this is in 2003, where she's spending more and more time on Capitol Hill and is soon going to be able to afford an office assistant. This is just the lobbyist. See, look now. If DynCorp, say their corporation, after they got caught up in that whole sex slave operation of little kids, and then they decided that some of the sex slave victims needed some kind of financial support, and they called someone like Marla, many people would see it more clearly for what it is. So we can't be under any kind of illusion about what the hell is going on and what it truly stands for in the larger picture.
My word, yeah. Well, they call it pimping and pandering. If we was talking about the victims of sex slavery, is she going to, quote, help? Boy, I guess some really horrible things happen in the name of humanity. You know, I got to tell you, brothers and sisters, it is in the name of humanity that the atom bomb was dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Because what the American ruling class said, you know, after that, people said, well, why'd y'all do it? The Japanese was about to surrender. You know, I mean, they just had some conditions. They wanted to negotiate with some dignity. And then you do this. I mean, come on. They said, listen, we wanted to save lives. I'm not kidding you. They actually said that. Because if we had kept fighting, more Americans would have died. Now, let's be careful here, because that's not saving lives. That's saving American lives at the expense of innocent civilians. And it had one more little quality to it, this dropping of the atomic bomb. And that is to intimidate the Russians at the time, to show the world who was the boss, who was in command. Oh, yeah. So it wasn't just some humanitarian act. In fact, I would argue, if you look carefully, the imperialist ruling class is simply incapable of being consistently humanitarian. Their entire system is barbaric and rotten to the core.
And another thing on this World War II issue is that the U.S. Empire had broken the code of the Japanese, and they knew that the Japanese were just looking for a way to give up. The Japanese had known that the party was over, and their only condition was, as they were talking amongst themselves, was that the emperor could not be hung, that he could not be killed. Other than that, they were willing to give up.
That was the only condition?
Yeah, and the U.S. knew that, man. And they went ahead and dropped the bomb anyway, and then they still let the emperor live. So it wasn't like that was a situation where they just found unacceptable. They wanted to drop that bomb.
Yeah,
and that bomb was a signal for the Cold War to get heated up. But let's hear now as Tim Reisner outlines how he feels Marla's impact will play itself out. So let's check this out. And then from there, let's take it from there. Check it out.
I think that the reason that those of us who knew Marla so well feel her loss so deeply and why we will miss her so much is that, as was said, that she was doing something that we all recognized was really important and needed to be done, but she was the one who was risking her life to do it. And so, in a sense, she was not just helping the victims of those wars, but she was also helping us. And I think that we now have a responsibility to try to continue what she started. And we now see that there really is a need to do a better job of keeping track of civilian casualties, so that we can do a better job of helping people who, as a result of our own mistakes, have suffered, innocent people. And that is what I think Senator Leahy wants to do in the future. That's what we as a country have to do, and it's because of Marla's work that I think we now see the importance of it.
Now, I remember when Fallujah happened, and then the U.S. Empire, along with this raw dog collateral damage escapade, started this kind of biometric data collection where they were getting people's DNA and all of this type of stuff if they wanted to come back into Fallujah. This was aimed at primarily the civilians. This was completely an unhumanitarian thing to do, as sadistic as one can think of just about. There's no position that Leahy and them are going to really take on this type of procedure.
Absolutely.
Because this works within the imperial strategy of control of the population in Iraq. So they're neck deep in that cow dung of imperialist deception, control, and takeover and stuff. So, in essence, there's no amount or illusion of an amount of, or confusion of an amount of strategies one can take on this Marla Razika level to try to make any kind of real change. That is deeply embedded in the class struggle, the population in this country and around the world. and one can't be confused. And, you know, Amy and them should have asked, this senator's aide some of these types of questions on this kind of class level. Instead of just playing this, you know, a martyr for our side died, our side, quote unquote, died. And let's put her up on some kind of a pedestal or something. Now, what is kind of also hypocritical and ironic about some of these things is that if, some activist type decided, you know what, I'm going to go to Iraq and help those Iraqi insurgents, and then went over there with a gun in hand, and then it got killed, there would be a lot of denunciation from many of these anti-war protesters saying that this is not the strategy to take, you can't take matters into your own hands through violence, etc., etc. So, but this Marla strategy, which is just another operation of violence because she's working within the imperial violent machine of the U.S. Empire, has got nothing but applause.
Well, part of it, it's, let's face it, this is being directed a bit by the ruling class here. This is no question. When you talk about this Leahy character, you know, humanitarian, come on, my butt. This is nuts. If you think for one second that a cat that's been around as long as Leahy is truly concerned with the citizens of Iraq. But back on this Fallujah thing as proof of this, all right? People should know this. Fallujah put up resistance to Sam. Actually, the population of Fallujah ran Sam off. They made them back up. So this whole thing of leveling this city, I'm trying to think like of a historic battle. You know, it was just, there was nothing there. The whole idea that Sam was trying to transmit to the Iraqi people is, it is senseless to resist. And we'll kill as many of you as necessary. Ain't worried about it. And to carry that out, to show the banality of that oppression, was very important to the imperialists. Now, in that context, to run around here talking about humanitarian aid, when they're giving away billions of dollars to citizens to work for private contractors, and you have citizens that are not soldiers participating in the torture and interrogation of prisoners, for instance. I mean, come on. This is, it's kind of ridiculous. There's no such a thing. It's an oxymoron to talk about a humanitarian war and humanitarian imperialist intervention. No such animal, brothers and sisters. We have to take a hard line on this.
What's also interesting is that another person who was killed, there was a few, in this car bombing attack that killed Marla, was that a guy named Salim was also killed. I think he was the driver or something. And there's an article where it said that Salim's friends begged him for 2 years to stop working with Americans, saying it was too dangerous. This was said by one colleague. Now, what's revealing about this is that, see, these Iraqis understood that the sentiment for any of the occupiers there and anyone who represented an occupier, i.e. an American, was not looked too favorably on. Now, like I mentioned before, if you went there with a gun in your hand and you were helping saw some of these cats' heads and doing some of that type of stuff, they'd probably say, Akbar, you down, you know, that type of thing. But other than that, they didn't have no time for you. So even though she had done all of this quote-unquote aid work, many of the Iraqi people knew that, hey, look, things don't look too good for anyone was colored in red, white, and blue. Hold on a second. Wrap this up. We're going to go into a few notes from Exactomania. And this is going to deal with how much of the American gumpified population often is so obsessed with sports, athletes, etc., and claim that they get a lot of claim that they use a lot of their overall moral, political outlook on honor, respect, and stuff through sports and how they look at these sports figures, but somehow can't see beyond the clouds or the skin color of many of the athletes and apply it to some of the more real important and larger issues. Recently, Terrell Owens, football player for Philadelphia, he's been under the hot seat by many of the fans and listeners of, you know, sports talk shows because he wants to renegotiate his football contract. He has a contract where he's getting X amount of, you know, millions of dollars per year. He had a good season last year, and he wants to renegotiate it, i.e. break the contract and renegotiate it. Now, the team, Philadelphia Eagles, their management saying, no, we're not, honor your contract, get back to playing, et cetera, et cetera. And you can hear many of the fans be solidly behind this type of honor your contract. We're going to check out a couple of these comments that have been made about this particular issue, and then let's see how it plays out in the larger world. Check it out.
Point, and that's why I was telling Rick earlier, I hope that Terrell Owens embraces this chance to finally grow up and make that step into manhood and realize that what you say can have a negative effect on what you do in your professional life. The Eagles have told them, we are not going to give you a brand new contract. We're not going to tear it up. This is T.O.'s chance to say, alright, I'm going to keep my mouth closed and I'm going to do my job. He doesn't have to apologize. He doesn't have to, you know, to go out and shake hands and kiss babies. Just do your job, but make sure you do your job in a professional manner. And I wonder if he's going to step across that line and start to be a man now.
Let's hope he does. James in San Jose. Good afternoon, James.
How you doing?
Great.
I agree with that last statement that Rod just made. Once you're under contract, you honor that contract no matter what.
All right, now, see, here you hear this whole rhetoric about, you know, honor your contract. And you often hear this when these sports figures are on. Honor your contract, do your job, quit complaining, et cetera, et cetera. Now, recently, we had a situation where United Airlines decided that the contract that they had for a pension fund for the workers, the 120,000 plus workers that they have employed for them, is something that shouldn't be validated any longer. So United Airlines runs to the courts, and the courts give their nod of approval that, you know what, this pension fund is kind of taxing on you. You know, this $9 to $10 billion pension fund. A contract that you signed and worked out with your workers that they worked for, that they fulfilled their obligations, now can be shredded up into 1,000 points of light and thrown out into the atmosphere, the smoggy atmosphere. Now, you don't hear from the population at hand that is so upset with Terrell Owens about not standing up and owning up like a man and honoring his contract. You don't hear this type of vitriotic machismo statements said by these same type of individuals to the United Airlines of the world to honor your contract. Hey, United Airlines, these people work for you 30, 40 years. Honor your contract or else. We're not going to tolerate this. You know, it's only, that type of rhetoric is only saved for, you know, little athletes and stuff. Then all of a sudden, here comes out this determined, steadfast type of statement about honoring one's contract. These corporations break and bust contracts all the time. These thugs, and in the real picture, look at it like this. You have a situation where if you don't want to pay for football tickets to see Terrell Owens play, you don't have to. Ain't nothing coming out of your pocket by Terrell Owens getting more or less money for his particular contract. But with what has recently happened, and if it follows through, like there's a very good possibility that it will, with the United Airlines situation, some of that burden of paying partial, the partial funds for the United Airline employees, some of that is going to come from taxpayers. So it's directly affecting American citizens' pocketbooks over this contract break by the corporations. So where is the vitriolic condemnation once again from these corporations concerning these corporations breaking these contracts when they're doing it in a way that directly affects the American citizen's pocketbook?
Absolutely. I mean, my goodness, it's hard to follow that because I'm in absolute agreement with it. But understand, this trend of not honoring these contracts started in the, you know, about, oh, more than a decade ago with the, when the steel industry could not compete with Japanese and German steel. And then they started running to bankruptcy court trying to get out from behind their obligations. It's rather sad. It's rather sad as I read all of the accounts of what the workers are planning to do, what they're going to do, what's going on, to see, you know, you hear this tough talk against terror. You know, somebody said it the other day on the radio. This is a kiss-up, kick-down society. And very weak, intellectually devoid people pick up on that real quick. And, well, Tracy, to be perfectly honest with you, this example right here, these two poor individuals making all, talking all that tough talk with principles and blue, blue, blue. They're perfect examples of a product of a kiss up, kick down society.
And what's sad is also, one is this clown Rod Brooks. He's some little Negro talk, you know, sports talk show. And his sidekick is Rick Barry, the former NBA player. So that was Rick Barry also agreeing with him. And then some little pathetic caller talking all that, you know, honor your contract type of stuff. It's the same old pathetic game getting played,
by the way,
over and over again.
By the way, must say this, Tracy. I just got to get this in here. Understand something. Capitalism, the capitalist system in decline. Every day, one more step closer to its deathbed. The real question, are you going to sit around and let them take you down with them? But they can't honor their contracts. This system is falling. The economy is so bad that only one out of three American teenagers has a job. That's a good indicator. Only two-thirds of the young people in America between the age of 20 years old and 22 years old, two-thirds have a job. It was three-fourths 1 year ago. It has gone down to two-thirds, or 67%. I want y'all to think of, they can't do it. In other words, capitalism cannot feed its slaves. What are we going to do?
Also, you have a situation where this is not an honorable system. So to expect the capitalist to honor anything is basically to be based in an illusion. Even when the capitalist market system was in a quote-unquote, from an economic standpoint, more healthy state for the capitalists, like, in the 1920s and stuff like that, those fools weren't honoring any contract. They were still pimping and stuff. They had kids, you know, child laborers and all of this other type of stuff. If you look throughout the third world, they've always exploited people because they're based off of an exploitative, expansionist type of mode of profit that puts their profit over human worth, over the biosphere's worth, over humanity's worth. Hold on a sec. That the illusions cannot be tolerated any longer. The illusions of so-called combat veterans like Bill O'Reilly, to the illusions that it's pretty normal to be plunging your penis into domesticated animals like Mr. Christian Man, to the illusion that humanitarian aid can work side by side with the imperialists. The next time any of these types come around, just say, hey, excuse me, mister. Until the next time, slave revolt. Out.
Mr. Light.